to the MMA Roadshow, the first ever edition of the MMA Roadshow. My name is John Morgan from MMAJunkie.com, USA Today Sports. Something I've been wanting to do a long time and talking about launching a little podcast because, listen, I'm on the road a lot and I just miss talking about MMA. I love my boys at MMA Junkie Radio, but, man, they're going early in the morning, Monday through Friday, and a lot of times I'm just tied up and can't get to them. So, hey, they can't take it away from me, man. I want to sit here and talk some MMA. That's what we're going to do tonight. My boy Cold Coffee is with me.
What's up? What's up?
Not much, man. Listen, for a first episode, we've been talking about doing this for a while. For a first episode, I think we might have set the bar a little bit high. Just to set the stage for you here, we have spent the week in beautiful Delray Beach, Florida. We have rented a house just a few blocks from the ocean. And right now, we are sitting outside on the patio. It's got to be like 70 degrees. The sun is down.
Yep, this is amazing.
We've got a couple of adult beverages in hand, having a good night. And listen, we get to see some pretty exotic places over the years, but I don't know if we're going to get too many better studios than we've got right now.
I agree. And it's funny you said that the radio guys are holding the morning down. And in typical Morgan fashion, I believe you're holding the night down, and here we are. You know, it's dark outside, but it's cool. You know, like you said, a couple adult beverages. You know, what more can you ask for?
That's it, man. So listen, what we did this week is there is a UFC event, of course, going on in Fairfax, Virginia. Our buddy Justin Park is out there. Matt Erickson is out there. They are holding things down for that UFC event. What we did is actually went on the road, came down to Southern Florida to talk to the members of the Black Zillions, to talk to the members of American Top Team. Of course, the Ultimate Fighter 21 launches in a couple of weeks. A couple of those guys in both camps have some big fights lined up. And what we like to do at MMAJunkie.com is just go out on the road and hit up these camps sometimes. And Ben Folks does this quite a bit for us. He's done a few of these in the past.
Yep.
But he just had another baby recently, so he's at home with two kids.
Congratulations,
Ben. Yeah, two kids, man. I can't get it. I got one. I actually brought my wife and kid along with me. We kind of made this a family trip as well. But, you know, that was the kind of whole premise of coming down here. So, you know, just kind of wanted to share a little insight. And that's what I hope we can do on this show is, you know, there's a lot of analysis. There's a lot of insight. There's a lot of people talking about fights that are coming up. And we'll do a little bit of that over the months and weeks to come. But I just want to kind of share what's going on and kind of what we're seeing a little bit behind the scenes because we are very fortunate. You know, at MMAJunkie.com and USA Today has been a fantastic partner. They support us. We are out there on the road. We are at every single UFC event. You know, one of the only media outlets that can make that claim. And, you know, we're very fortunate to do that. And I think sometimes we don't necessarily get to really share all the stuff that we get to see behind the scenes. So I'm hoping that's something that we can do moving forward.
And being me as being new to the group and the organization, you know, one thing by I think you guys going everywhere is you do see the relationships forming. You know, you walk into these gyms and it's funny, you guys would get a kick out of this. Morgan walks in and I swear guys are hitting mitts or hitting whatever off to the side and they'll stop and make a break just to come over and give him a pat on the back or say, hey, what's up? You know, they might rib him a little bit because he maybe picked against him in their last fight, you know, and they're quick to point that out to him, you know, but of course, you know, they understand, you know, that, you know, being John and John, you know, he's going to say what he thinks. But he's quick to also say, you're right, I was wrong, you know. And it's really neat to see that when they go to the gym and let alone the gyms that we went to on this trip was amazing, you know, to see the interactions that I think has came specifically because of the effort that MMAJunkie.com does to go out there and do all these events. These guys are seeing you guys everywhere. So they, in turn, feel free to say, hey, what's up, and tell you all their deepest and darkest secrets, and which now you could share in this podcast.
That's it, man. Well, what we did is we headed out on Monday. We took the red eye, took a 10:40 flight from Las Vegas, flew overnight, tried to get a little bit of sleep on the plane, didn't get too much sleep on the plane, got in about 6:30 in the morning to Miami and drove out to the Black Zillions camp, the Jocko Training Center. Right now, the Jocko Training Center in Boca Raton, Florida, basically all the Jocko signage is gone right now. From what I understand and what I was told, they stripped that away because of the Ultimate Fighter filming that was done there. Of course, the Ultimate Fighter that's coming up, American Top Team versus Black Zillions, they did something a little bit different. They actually had the fights in the gyms, and we'll get to that in a little bit. I think that's going to be a fun little concept. But so there's no Jocko logos anywhere anymore. It's just the Black Zillions, the home of the Black Zillions. And we walked in there, and, man, the first thing that I got, it was a sparring day on Tuesday, and the first thing I got really, man, was just the intensity that they brought to the table.
Yep.
Henry Hooft, very no bullshit, we'll just say. Yep. I mean, he's very straightforward kind of guy. George Santiago, of course, you know, a veteran fighter, bringing some insight as well. And I like the intensity of Greg Jones as well.
Yeah,
man, really intense as they were directing practice. And I don't know, as I was watching sparring, of course, anytime guys are sparring, You know, they want to go hard, but it was a very respectful intensity. I didn't feel like anybody was trying to, you know, green light anybody or trying to make an example. But I don't know, Kenny, as you were filming things, tell me, man. I mean, the first thing I got was just the overwhelming intensity that these guys had for practice.
It was, and it's funny, you know, I think back, and if anybody thinks about any, like, maybe karate class they took as a kid or all these other ones, you know, and it's like you're sort of air sparring with everybody, and you're going in there and you're tapping, you're doing a little bit of this, and it reminds you if you did points, you know, if you scored points, whoever got first, like, oh, I got you, man, you know, like here, that shit would not fly. Like, literally, I thought that they were it felt like they were sparring 100%, but you knew that they weren't. That just showed the level of the guys that were in there. But these guys were going. I mean, it was enough to be like, shit, I'd think twice before I was going to, you know, go into this gym and say, hey, you know, and carry some chip on my shoulder thinking like I'm a badass. You go in there and see that, you're like, oh, okay. Let me watch the pros do this for a little bit, because you're right. I mean, they were swinging. They were going at it. But when people went down or people did whatever, they were very respectful. You know, they were quick to pull them up. You know, there was no, hey, you know, I got the best one on you. There were no egos involved. It was amazing to see. And, you know, I was a little surprised, you know, but like they, and I'm sure you'll bring it up and say, you know, it was one of the things they mentioned, you know, it's like when you're going to, if you're trying to prepare for an event, you know, you're not going to prepare for an event if you're just, you know, little slaps around each other, you know, and you just do a little pitter patter, you know, that's not going to prepare you for taking for a punch. I mean, I think that's the philosophy these guys have said, and it's certainly what they showed.
Yeah,
you know,
it was funny. We asked Henry Hoof to explain Dutch kickboxing, you know, and he just said, well, I'm Dutch. And I'm a kickboxer,
and I
so kickbox. That's the Dutch kickboxing style. But he did. He said, "Listen, man, if you're getting ready for a fight, you've got to fight." And that's what they did. A couple of things we saw: Abel Trujillo. What kind of odd timing that we got to see there? Abel Trujillo during sparring, we saw him out of the corner of our eye go down on the ground. He was actually in the cage. They had a mat area that's in there. He was actually in the cage area doing a little bit of sparring. Of course, he was scheduled to fight John McDessie later this month. At UFC 186, and we saw him go down, and the way he was laying on the ground and kind of writhing a little bit, I thought he got caught with a low blow, is what I thought. I thought somehow he got hit in the groin, and he was down for a little bit, and then it was a little bit odd because, you know, he wasn't shaking it off real quick, he wasn't getting back to it, and so he was down for a little bit, and afterwards it seemed like everybody was kind of apologizing, and hey, are you okay? And so I still wasn't exactly sure what happened, and practice was over, and we said, hey, you know, Abel Trujillo is one of the guys we wanted to speak to, and we said, hey, do you mind? Cole Coffey, of course, my buddy here, he's shooting video, I'm doing the interviews, and said, hey, man, you mind coming over and giving us a little interview? And he said, sure, absolutely, let's do this. And we asked him what happened. And, I mean, this was off camera, but before he did the interview, and said, hey, you know, are you okay? I saw you got hurt. You know, just want to make sure that he was well enough to talk to us. And he said, well, you know, listen, man, I was throwing a spinning back fist and ended up basically just landing with his forearm instead of landing with the fist. And he said his forearm was hurt a little bit. And then we did the interview. And he admitted, look, John McDessie is known for those spinning highlights, you know, the back fist. And Abel Trujillo said, listen, I'm starting to study tape. I'm starting to, you know, learn about other guys' styles and embrace other guys' styles. And it turns out he was kind of embracing John McDessie's style, and it just backfires in the worst way. We didn't say anything at the time. Listen, when gyms are nice enough to let us in and they're giving us carte blanche to come in, there are a little bit of rules. Yes, we're journalists. Yes, we're reporters. But there's some things that are seen. Obviously, you know, you don't talk about strategies that you've seen. You don't tell people, hey, man, this was the game plan they were working on. Here's what I saw. And I kind of feel the same way with injuries as well, because, you know, you can see guys get nicked up a little bit and say, yeah, I'm hurt, but I'm not hurt enough to pull out of that fight. You know, I'm still going to fight. And so, you know, we kind of left it alone. We would end up coming back the next day and finding out that Abel Trujillo had broken his arm and had to withdraw from the fight.
Which was unreal, because like you said, he's giving this interview the whole time and gave me no clue that had happened. You know, I mean, that's, I think, speaks to the level of the athletes that are there, you know, as well. But also, I don't think he really knew what was going on as well. And I do think, you know, and I was thinking about, is it happened so quick, you're right, that he hit the floor. But I remembered shooting, and I thought I heard maybe like a gasp or some sort of like a grunt or, you know, a loud or something that was like, oh, wait, that didn't sound normal, you know. Because I know that they put him up in the cage and they were trying to, you know, give them that good workout because, you know, of course, they're preparing for this upcoming fight, you know, and it's not like they're going to do anything to put him at risk because, I mean, that's ultimately what they're all trying to say is like, all right, let's go hard, let's do our thing. But also, you know, nobody's out there trying to hurt each other. You know, and it's unfortunate because, you know, like you said, he was trying to do a little bit of moves, and I was, it, for some reason, this sparked in my head and made me think of our good friend Chael Sonnen when he tried to do some spinning back moves too. Like, he was trying to imitate somebody, and that, you know, unfortunately didn't work so well as what, you know, in that instance as well, you know. But
sometimes it's better to just stick with what you got.
Sometimes I think it's just better to stick with you. And the thing is, we were watching him do it before, you know, I didn't get to see him try to do the spin move, but he looked sharp. He looked strong. You know, he was hitting well. And I think maybe that's why I wasn't paying so much attention. I was like, wow, all right, he's looking on point. Let's look at all these other fine athletes that are doing their thing. And I think that's why it was so shocking to hear something happen, you know, behind us.
Yeah, hope he heals up quick, man. It's sad for Abel Trujillo. I think it was Mike Bond actually tweeted, this is the sixth time in Abel Trujillo's UFC career that he's had a fight canceled within a month of the fight.
Oh,
so,
man.
I keep thinking he's going to be one of these breakout stars, and obviously he's just got to get consistent fights to do it. So, another guy that was in the gym, Michael Johnson. Michael Johnson coming off a fantastic win over Edson Barboza in Brazil a few months back.
Boy, and he looked good in that one.
He looked incredible. And Michael was funny because he's one of those guys you mentioned earlier. He's one of those guys that said, you know, listen, man, I saw you. You picked against me. You doubted me. You knew. And, you know, it's a little bit of a ribbing. It's kind of fun. You know, we do those MMA Junkie staff picks. And, you know, listen, I try to be honest, you know, and pick who I think is going to win the fight. That doesn't mean that I want one guy to win or, I don't want the other guy to win or what have you. It's just, look, I'm making my predictions and doing the best I can. And I thought, honestly, Michael Johnson was just going to be running up against a little bit too much in Edson Barboza. But, you know, he said, listen, I'm the fastest guy at lightweight. And, you know, if anybody doubts me, I'm just done with them. I don't even want to hear him anymore. And I'll be honest, I'm done doubting Michael Johnson. That guy has proven every step of the way that he is the real deal.
You know, I swear, I've seen that guy, you know, and I think you're right. He had those moments of greatness. And then I don't know if it was a mental thing or something where maybe he slipped and maybe didn't have a great performance. But looking at him, especially in Barboza, and then just seeing how he was talking when we interviewed him, and there's something different that's going on. Whatever he's got, whatever mental thing, that switch that went off, beware, people, like, because this dude is on point and he's firing on all cylinders. I thought what he did to Barboza was nothing short of just fucking amazing. I mean, that was, in my opinion, his best fight ever.
Absolutely.
And, again, probably some of the toughest, you know, fights ever. But it goes to show, look at what the fuck this camp is doing. What these people are doing, the level of people, goes to show. And they've got the right philosophy. Man, he looked so good.
Yeah,
I was so proud of him. You know, I was like, fuck.
He did. You know, and Henry Hooft was explaining it. And I think this describes Michael Johnson as well. He did say, listen, one of the things that we're doing and we're teaching is more combinations with the hands, more attacks, more looking for the knockout. You know, you think about kickboxing, you think about the Thai style, lots of low kicks, working legs. And not that that's an ineffective strategy, but they're trying to be a little bit more direct about it. Let's really add up the punching combinations. Let's go for the chin. We're looking for knockouts. We're not looking to outpoint you. We're not looking to add things up. We're looking to knock you out. And I thought Michael Johnson looked great. He told us, listen, he wants Benson Henderson next.
Yeah.
And it makes a lot of sense. You know, there's a lot of guys already matched up. And that's a former champion, and I think if he could pick up that win, that would be fantastic. So I'd like to see that fight come together. Whether it will or not, I don't know. But I'd like to see it. Another guy that we got to see, Rashad Evans.
Oh, boy.
Rashad Evans, first of all, cut an incredible promo for you, just yelling that he's back, barking at the camera.
Oh, God, that was like vintage Rashad. What a consummate professional, man. That dude is so on point. If I could say to athletes and fighters coming up that are trying to take pointers on who I should maybe emulate and imitate, Rashad Evans. The dude is the consummate pros. You know, I don't have to say, hey, can you please, like, repeat the question back in your answer? Can you do this? Can you make sure you stay here? Or here, look at this guy. The guy does it all. So I'm telling you, fighters, you want to look at somebody. And I don't think it, you know, some people are like, oh, he's cocky. Oh, he's this. The dude knows his shit. He's confident in his skills, which I think every fighter would say you have to be a good fighter. And he's been around and he's done it. I mean, he's a former champion, and I love working with that dude.
He was great. And, you know, he's obviously coming back from this knee injury, and was really just candid when he talked to us and just said, listen, Certainly. You know, I'm thinking about the next stage of my career. I don't think I'm there yet. I think I still have a lot left to offer. And he looked good. He was just hitting mitts. He couldn't go full strength yet, but he was hitting mitts. Looked really strong.
Yeah, he looked real strong. He looked big.
Yeah, looked focused. And, you know, admits, though, that he understands he's getting towards the later stage of his career. It's time to start thinking about what comes next. I thought it was really cool to see that what Rashad told us was, yes, of course he wants to be an analyst. Everybody wants that Fox job, right? I mean, sit at the desk and get paid to talk about fights. Who doesn't want to do that? But, you know, he said, listen, I've got a real passion for coaching as well.
Yeah.
And I think that's honest because you could see it. You know, he couldn't spar, obviously. He couldn't take part in the sparring sessions because he is still healing up. But he couldn't sit down either. He was there, and he came in and sat in the corner and was just kind of watching everybody. And before you know it, he was jumping up, getting in the middle, giving little pointers, tips to people. You know, and I'm talking about guys at all levels. He's giving UFC fighters pointers. Yep. He's giving, you know, up-and-comers pointers. So, I mean, he really wants to be in the mix. So I think there is a good future for him as a coach at some point. Not to say that he's done fighting yet. I think he's still
definitely
got some things that he can do in the light heavyweight division. But it does seem like that's a road for him to be at some point.
Yeah, and I think he's got the wealth of experience, and I think the guys know he's been there, so they know that – when he says something, he's not just saying something in jest. He's not saying something that he knows isn't true. I mean, he's speaking it from the heart, and he's been there. I mean, the dude has been there. In fact, at one point I noticed him filming on his camera or on his phone, and I thought, oh, he's just taking video. But afterwards, when the guy got done sparring, the guy was sitting there. It was like they were reviewing video and film. So, he was going that far. Like, the dude, he's about helping the teammates, and I think he'd be a wonderful coach.
That's fantastic. That's good to hear.
Yeah.
Noticeable absentee. Let me tell you how we got to the Black Zillions, first of all. The way this trip was kind of started was at UFC 184 in Los Angeles. Happened to be standing around with Vitor Belfort and Anthony Johnson. Obviously, there was the big not the time is now. What is it now?
Welcome to the show.
The welcome to the show press conference.
That time was then.
The time was then. It's a welcome to the show. So the welcome to the show press conference was over before UFC 184 started at the Staples Center. They brought all the guys that were on the stage back to the media center and let us talk. Then they said, hey, listen, we're going to go outside real quick. The Black Zillion guys are going to go out there and take pictures with this trophy. There's a big, tough trophy that's going to be on the line in this edition of The Ultimate Fighter. And while I was there, I was talking with Vitor Belfort. And Vitor and I have a little bit of a history, we can say.
You can say that.
He's a former Las Vegas resident. And, we had a relationship when he lived in Las Vegas. Obviously, me being there as well, you end up interviewing the guy a lot. And that was great. And then we hit a little sour patch in our relationship after his fight with Luke Rockhold, I believe, was the fight. I asked him in the press conference. Of course, this was in the heart of all the testosterone replacement therapy controversy. And I asked him what I thought was a fairly simple question. I was like, listen, man, is it frustrating for you that, anytime you have these highlight reel finishes, the only thing anybody wants to talk about is testosterone? And really just kind of giving him a platform to address it. I was not trying to skewer him in any way or anything like that, but just give him a platform to address it. And he basically got upset and said that people should beat me up, and it was a weird situation. Now, we worked through that very quickly afterwards. You know, a month or two afterwards, we ended up ironically just sitting on a plane together our seats were across the aisle from each other, and we ended up talking for like 3 hours, and so we worked it all out, and we're on much better terms now. But at UFC 184, he said, man, listen, you should come out to Florida. You should come out and watch me train. Obviously, Anthony's got a big fight coming up, and we said, yeah, man, you know what? That does make a lot of sense, and that's why we put this gym trip together. Part of coming down here was thinking that we'd get to see Anthony Johnson as well. Obviously, he's got a huge fight with John Jones coming up in May. And it turns out that Anthony Johnson was not in the gym. He was actually in China.
China. Can
doing seminars.
That?
I mean, we're talking about, I guess we're what, 7-8 weeks out at this point. So I suppose he's not necessarily in full training camp regimen yet, but in China. And, you know, I think a lot of people, that might be some red flags. Henry addressed the situation very much. Henry's actually, today, is actually boarding a plane as well. He's going to China as well. But he said, listen, man, you guys don't understand. Anthony is so dialed in right now. I believe Ryan Loco's with him.
Yeah.
Said that they're jogging, they're training, they're doing things. You know, Anthony is just in this mindset right now. That I don't worry the fact that he's in China. It doesn't matter where he's at. I know he's focused. I know he's dialed in. I know he's training. So, kind of weird that he's not here. But I think it does. I kind of agree with Henry, man. Just the man, the dedication that he has had, the peace of mind that he's had, the attitude that he's had since he came back to the UFC, since he's now fighting at 205 pounds, not getting to 170, not having to suffer and diet and just look miserable all the time.
Yep.
I don't know. I, you know, most fighters, you might feel a little weird. Like, why is he in China right before the biggest fight of his life? I honestly don't feel that weird by it.
Right. And, you know, and I think it speaks to the level of some of these guys that we think of, oh, he's in camp. You know, he must be working out. These are the same guys that are so hooked on it. Even when they're not in camp, they're working out. And even look at him now. He's in China, but is he on vacation? No, he's teaching, you know, seminars, and he's doing whatever, you know. So I guarantee he's working out over there. And I think you hit it on the head. You know, he's at the weight class that he should be at. I think he's comfortable. I think he doesn't take him much because he never really gets out of that zone where he's like, oh, I've been, you know, slacking off, and now I got, you know, 14 days to drop 25 pounds or something. You know, I think he's done the right thing, and he is a new Anthony Johnson. I'm telling you, you want to talk about somebody that is, you know, as well, you know, and I say this about a lot of guys, that they're a pleasure to work with, you know, but honestly, I think most of these UFC guys and these guys that especially go to camps like this have a different mentality, and I think that is attributed to the coaches and the other fighters that are there. They just carry themselves better than I think most people would ever understand, and we're lucky enough to get to work with him. But he has a swagger. It was still the time is now, you know, even though now it was the time that was then, you know, they had the big press conference, and I was lucky enough to see him. He was shooting some pictures in the backstage with one of the UFC photographers, and he just had a swagger about him, a confidence that it was just like, wow. You know, it wasn't like a cocky confidence, like I'm a bad man. It was like, I feel really confident with myself. I'm glad to be here. And you could see it, you know, and I don't think he's going to do things to jeopardize that. I think you have a super uber focused Anthony Johnson, and that is a dangerous thing because he's comfortable and he's relaxed. And it's like this fighting thing, that the fight game is fun for him again. And I think that's the most dangerous thing. And it's like, y'all better beware.
I mean, it's funny. You know, one of the guys that really stood out to me one time, you talk about that confidence, was Chris Weidman before he fought Anderson Silva the first time. Like, there's guys that you can tell they're kind of hyping themselves up. They're kind of trying to tell themselves that, yes, I belong here. Yes, this is my moment. And then there's other guys that just believe it. And I think Anthony Johnson believes it. So I'm looking forward to that. Unfortunately, we didn't get to speak to him this week, but obviously we'll get some opportunities to speak to him between now and then. But you know, some huge fights on the horizon, and that's a big one. So finally we get to the man, and we're still on Tuesday of this week. We get to the man that invited us down here to get started, and that was Vitor Belfort. We filmed a little bit of Vitor Belfort inside the gym at Black Zillions. We did stay away from some of his game planning stuff.
Sure.
He did ask, hey, please stay away from this more specific drilling. He's really just kind of in the very beginning stages of the real hard part of the training camp. He looks to be in good shape already, but really starting to dial things in. Spent a little bit of time with him then, but then Vitor was kind enough to invite us to his private gym.
Yep.
He has an office complex and a private gym that he has built a few minutes away from Black Zillions. Really closer to American Top Team than it is to Black Zillions, but this is not – I mean, it's about 10 miles between the two gyms, so it's not a long way. Got a chance really, man. We spent about an hour talking to Vitor kind of off the record, just you know, picking our brains.
Yeah.
It was interesting. I thought it was great because he brought us in. His wife had brought him lunch to eat, and so he wanted to eat that lunch real quick and before he did the interview, and we kind of talked while he was eating and just had some really great discussions, I thought, even off record, where it was more like Vitor was interviewing us. You know, he's really –
What do you think about this? It caught me off guard a little bit.
It was. You know, you can really tell that he's into contemplating the future of MMA. You know, where is the right move for him as a fighter? What should he do after his career? You know, and not really that he was asking us any specific information for him as far as what we thought about Vitor. It was just, tell me what you think about the business. Tell me what you think about the sport.
Tell me what you think. It was that business analytical mind of his that was just going, that if you've never seen it before, I was a little surprised because – He's a sharp businessman, and it makes sense. A dude's got gyms, you know, in Brazil, and then this one, you know, and they look good. You know, I think this was a private gym. I'm not sure what the full deal was, but you could tell he has a business mind. So outside of just even thinking, you know, about my career, this, he's thinking about the business side for other athletes and what's the best way for other athletes to address things. And it's almost like he's picking his own brain and picking our brains and anybody around them so they can pass on knowledge to other people, you know? And it caught me off guard. I was like, wow, I wish I had a good answer to give you, because I could tell the dude thought about it so much more than I ever thought about it. And I was like, wow, I need to sit back and do my homework before I have another discussion with Vitor, because I'm like, man, I'm a little shell-shocked right now, you know? It was amazing. It was neat to see that that's what he was thinking about. Of all the things that he could be thinking about, you know, his, you know, I'm sure the guy's got, you know, he's got a fight upcoming, but he's still thinking about the future and businesses and opportunities and all these angles that I would have never thought that somebody in his position, this, you know, outside of a fight would be thinking about. You know?
Very cool private gym that he's got set up for himself there. He said he does work out there sometimes when he wants to bring in maybe training partners. He doesn't really want people to see what he's working on, or basically it's just convenient, you know, if he wants his family around or whatever the case may be. Motivational sayings everywhere.
Yeah,
everywhere
neat.
You look in the gym, I mean, you think about Vitor Belfort, you do think about this extreme self-confidence that he has. And I'll tell you, man, listen, this week, he turned 38 this week,
yes,
Wednesday,
like
April 1st.
Right?
Yeah, that was
happy
that,
birthday.
That was his birthday.
Vitor, happy belated birthday.
38 years old, right in the middle of training camp. And but, you know, you sit down and you talk to him, and he's another guy that has this extreme self-confidence. And he really, you know, he feels he's better than ever. And he gets you believing it, man. I mean, whether it's true or not, that'll be seen on the fight for sure.
Sure.
But, I mean, he certainly convinces you that he's got an opportunity. This is a very difficult fight for him, man. He is facing a beast in Chris Weidman. And Chris Weidman has silenced all doubters with his performances as of late. But, you know, Vitor Belfort really feels like he's got an opportunity in this fight. And I thought the really interesting thing was and we ended up spending, you know, we talked about the time that we spent off record. We also spent close to half an hour on record with him as well.
Yeah.
And you know, I plan on, you know, adding that audio to the end of this when we finish, just to let everybody hear it. We'll be chopping it up.
Good stuff.
Yeah, we'll be chopping it up in videos and some mini pieces, but just let people hear the whole conversation if they want to. But I thought one of the interesting things he said is, you know, when I asked him, how much time do you spend thinking about Chris Weidman and the preparation, he said, almost nothing, man. I'm not worried about him. I'm just worried about me.
Right. But what was awesome, and even though we say that, it wasn't meant in a disrespectful manner at all. You know, and he goes on to say, you know, he was talking about and he was thinking about the things that he can control, the things that he needs to do, his own mindset and his own game. There was nothing like, oh, I'm not worried about Chris Weidman. You know, the man's not, he's not an idiot, you know. And I think anybody at this point, if you think that you could just brush off Chris Weidman, you're probably not in the right spot, you know, because that man is going to – he brings some serious – like Weidman is a serious force, but he was respectful in a manner, but it was a matter of, I got to worry about me and this, all this other stuff. And I'll let you elaborate more, but, yeah, Vitor, man, smart dude.
It is. And I'm anxious to see the fight, man. You know, gosh, you know, in my head, you know, I've still got a few weeks until I need to figure out the pick. You know, it's tough to pick against Chris Weidman. It's tough to pick
it
against
is.
Chris Weidman anymore, man, because of what he's accomplished. But Vitor does seem to be in a good place, man. He really does seem to be in a good place. And it's, man, the drive that he has is catching. So, like I said, we'll play that whole interview later, and you can kind of listen to the whole conversation and kind of hopefully get a little bit of insight. Listen, closed the interview by talking about his sister, something I haven't heard him talk about in a long time. So
that
really
heavy.
Kind of opened up his heart to us, man, and really shared it with
it's
us.
It's worth sitting to the very end just to hear that bit, because I've never heard him elaborate like that. And I thought, I don't know if you saw it, but maybe it was just me, and maybe it was the fact that I have a light blaring into his eyes. I thought like he was starting to like choke up a little bit.
Sure.
I thought he was, you know, of course, I can only understand why, you know, because I'd never heard him say it. And I was like, oh my God, is he about to cry? I was like, I'll start fucking weeping over here if he start crying, because I knew how heavy the situation was. And his wife was in the room with us, you know, and he was describing the times that they were going through as it was happening, and it was so heavy, and it was just amazing. I loved that he felt comfortable enough, especially from his past rival John Morgan here. And I will let you all know, I was there when he called for John's head at the press conference, and there was one or two media out people in the room that were behind John that did stand up, but they did sit back down. But it was something. I was like, oh my Lord, I'm gonna watch Morgan get hung up here. But it was amazing to see, you know, come completely full circle, and then to a point where you guys have had a good enough relationship, and then for Vitor to open up about something so personal.
Yeah.
And it was amazing. And so, yes, you have to listen to the end of this podcast, and you listen to the end of the interview. Again, it was like a 30-ish minute, whatever, interview. And if we stick the whole thing on the end of this, it's worth sitting through, because there's other good stuff. And we are going to release some other stuff. But
yeah, we'll have little bits and pieces. And it's worth saying, too, that his wife, is super nice, man. They were great hosts. They invited us into the gym and just really took care of us. They were super
good
nice.
Good family. That's good people.
So that was Tuesday, and we had kind of set Tuesday aside as being the VTOR day.
Was a big, long day.
It was a long day. We kind of set it to be the VTOR day, but we picked up so much from Black Zillions that we got a lot done that day. But we had set Wednesday aside to be our Black Zillions day, so we went back. And we'd already done so many interviews, we were kind of ahead of the game. So it was a little bit slower of a day, which was much necessary. I thought one of the funny things that happened was on Wednesday, Thiago Silva was back in the gym.
Yep, he wasn't there. He wasn't there the first day, but he showed up. And
he was back in the gym. And, of course, this past weekend he had lost at World Series of Fighting 19. He lost to Teddy Holder. In fairness, he was supposed to fight Matt Hamill going into that. Matt Hamill got ill the morning of the fight. They had to switch up the card. Credit to Ali Abdelaziz for shuffling and making this thing and all the guys at World Series for making this thing. And, you know, credit to Thiago Silva because I remember I was talking to our good friend down in Brazil, Fernando Prades, who used to work with the UFC and now works for Globo. And, you know, I was speaking to her when this was happening. I was like, ugh. It's a tough matchup for Thiago Silva. Like, people don't really know who Teddy Holder is. But, you know, this was a more athletic guy, a guy that was going to come to stand and bang versus Matt Hamlin. Credit to Thiago Silva. He, you know, he did take the fight. He then got TKO'd in the first round. But the whole thing was building up to that fight. He did not want to talk to the media. And, of course, we know why. It was, you know, all the situation with his ex-wife. I mean, there was some real weird stuff that went down with that whole situation.
That's right.
And, you know, he just didn't want to talk about it. And so I get it. I mean.
You never know what angle journalist is going to come, you know. You know, luckily, I think a lot of them respect you and do whatever because, you know, again, there were no swings thrown or anything of that sort. But I think a lot of people, you know, do go out. And I think that goes to the whole thing where there is that fine balance of when a gym opens up the door, you got to come in there with some sort of level of respect as well. Don't start throwing some dirt on a guy that's especially trying to do whatever. I mean, still do your job. I'm not saying put the kid gloves on, but be respectful. And that question would have done no good, any bringing up any of that kind of crap. So I could see where it would be hesitant for him to possibly say, yeah, because what's this guy going to ask?
Of course. You know, I mean, personally, I would like to hear his side of the story. I would like to hear him apologize. I would like to hear him, you know – we all make mistakes. This was a pretty big mistake. When SWAT teams are involved and standouts are involved, it's a big mistake. But listen, man, things happen, and we don't always know what the situation is from the outside looking in. I'm not going to be the first one to judge. You know, you hate to hear it, but you would like to hear him step up and say something. But I totally understand why he wouldn't want to either.
You just gave him an open invitation. Should he feel ready?
Well, I also gave him an open invitation on Wednesday.
I said,
listen, Thiago. And it was funny because before Thiago fought Lyoto Machida, Alex Davis, who's a good friend of both of ours as well, was nice enough to invite me into Thiago Silva's training room. He was actually his manager at the time, and he was actually nice enough to invite me into the training room for the last session before the fight. And, you know, was able to see very specific game plan type stuff, talk to Thiago Silva. And that was at the heart of when people were just afraid of Thiago Silva. You know, like, this dude is crazy. And just found out what a really nice guy he was. And he's always been very kind to me. He speaks more English now than he did then. I still speak zero Portuguese. But we can communicate a little bit. But it was funny because he came in the gym and he actually kind of saw me and gave me a little like, hey, what's up, man? You know, how you doing? And I'm like, cool. So I thought, well, let's go see if he'll do an interview. And so I came up to him and I said, Thiago, listen, man, I know you didn't want to talk before the fight. I get it. I understand. Now that the fight's over, man, would you mind just giving us a couple of minutes? And right away he was like, nope. And there was pardon my language, fuck the media, may have come out at some point. I did say, well, what about me? You know, he's like, well, and he shook my hand. And so I guess I was, I got a little bit of a pass on that. But he does not want to talk to the media. So, you know, I don't know that that'll necessarily serve him well in the long run. You know, I think especially after this loss, you know, we'll see if World Series gives him another chance. But, I mean, listen, you know, in talking to Vitor, there's some going back to what Vitor said, you know, he talked about the fact that in this game, you are both a fighter, an athlete, and an entertainer. And I think people do forget about that fact that, you know, listen, you may not want to speak to the media. I know we're not always the greatest people to talk to, but you do need to get your voice out there some way, and the media is a great way to do that. And that's part of the entertainment business. And I think Thiago Silva, at some point, I think he's going to have to embrace that if he wants to get, you know, back up to that star level. So, you know, we spoke to Henry Hooft a little bit more at length on Wednesday, which was great as well. We'll have some video of that later in the week. You know, he really talked about what it's taken to build the Black Zillions. You know, those guys went under some criticism for a while, but, you know, they've got some big fights lined up. And he said, listen, you know, we're going to have some world titles this year. And if we don't have world titles, you're at least going to know that we were in a hell of a world title fight, man. We're going to put on a show. So anxious to see what they do. The last thing I want to say about Black Zillions, and it was really one of the last things we did before we left. And it was funny because we were just kind of standing around packing up. And I don't know the gentleman's name, and I wish I did because I'd like to give him credit. But the 51-year-old.
He was in shape for 51.
Did he say he was a veterinarian or a doctor or something?
Something.
Some physician, something. But he was in shape. Now, he was in the pro wrestling practice that day, and he was going hard. Well, I guess I should say it's just wrestling practice. But he was there. It wasn't sparring or anything like that. But, I mean, he was going hard. And he was one of those guys that, you know, when everybody's kind of you're kind of warming, cooling down at the end, he's still sprinting full speed, and the guy was in shape, and he says in his 50s.
He was going at it with some of the big boys too. I think he was over there with like the heavyweights.
He was, he was over with Scott Baird. He was going with Thiago Silva a little bit. You know, he's going with some of the bigger fighters. But it was funny because he was just kind of, you know, shooting the breeze with us a little bit as we were talking, and he said, "Listen, man, I want to fight in the UFC, and I want to fight CM Punk."
Yep. Like,
everybody wants CM Punk.
Even if it's only one fight, I just want to fight. I want to fight CM Punk. I was like, wow. You guys got beef or something?
Everybody wants to fight CM Punk. He's like, listen, man, I want to fight in the UFC one day, and I think the only way I could do it is if I fought CM Punk. So I feel bad. You know, I've had a chance to – listen, when CM Punk got I'll never forget the night that they came to us and they said, you know, they made the announcement on TV that CM Punk had been signed to the UFC, and, you know, Dana came over to us on press row that night. And I can't remember what event it was. It was definitely in Las Vegas. It was at Mandalay Bay, and he came over and talked to us, and he said, you know, listen, we signed CM Punk and this sort of thing. And obviously it was huge news. I had to Google him. I did not know much about CM Punk. I know he had done a couple of interviews here and there where, you know, he's a friend of Chael Sonnen and all that, but I didn't know much about him at all. So I really didn't know anything about him, but had a chance to interview him a couple times since. You know, he did a Q&A in Vegas. In Dallas, he was a guest fighter and was able to spend some time with us. The guy is really respectful, man. He's a nice guy. He's super well-spoken. And he's very respectful of his position in the sport. You know, he doesn't try to pretend I'm going to be world champion. He's like, listen, I just want to do this. I'm fortunate enough that I have the means financially that I can train full time, and I'm going to make a go at this. But I just thought it was funny that even a 51-year-old dude is calling out CM Punk.
I love it. And you're right about CM Punk. You know, I was lucky enough to see him. We did an interview, and what was nice about it, he's like, I know I'm the new guy coming to the gym. He's like, I don't expect to come in there and be treated, you know, like some top dog. He's like, I understand I need to take my licks like anybody else. And it was that dedication to get better at it. And every fighter I've heard from that said of his work ethic in the gym says he's the first guy in there and one of the last guys that leaves. That's going to shit. I mean, hey, let's give it a chance.
That's all you can ask for.
It's either going to work or it doesn't.
And that's it, man. So that brings us to today, Thursday morning. We actually made our way over to American Top Team. And first time I've ever been in American Top Team. I just don't make it to the East Coast that much. Don't make it down to Florida. And we've had an open invitation for a long time, and I'm kind of ashamed that it took me this long to get down there. But it was great to be there. You know, first of all, just like the Black Zillions, American Top Team is just kind of this nondescript building, you know, in a little business center, you know, a little warehouse-type area.
Yep.
But you walk in the door, and once practice gets underway, the number of guys, I mean, you know that American Top Team has a huge roster. You know the name. You know how many guys they've had. But the number of guys that you see in there, high-level guys going at one time, to me, was just, I don't want to say overwhelming, but it was just so impressive that it really kind of puts everything in perspective as just how great of a team American Top Team really is.
If you were a fanboy of the sport and you'd walk in there, you wouldn't know where to begin. Do I start over by where the guy's sitting over there because there's this guy and this guy? Or do I walk into where they're working out where, you know, it's funny, we're interviewing Thiago Alves, and look over to the right and there's Bigfoot working out on the bench press. And it was like, whoa, when did he get there? You know, because there were so many other guys. It was just amazing. Everywhere you looked, you're like, wow, stud, chick stud. What do you call a chick stud? Studette?
Studette, I guess. Studette,
chick stud. Amazing. It was, I was, you know, lucky I see these guys enough that I don't get too starstruck, but it was enough to make you starstruck. You know, it was just the pure star value in one room.
It is. Cool the way they do practice. They actually, so their pro practice, they divide it up. Yeah. Middleweights and up, and then welterweights and down. And I thought that was really smart. And Dan Lambert was kind of showing us around. Yeah. Richie Guerrero was showing us around as well. And, you know, it was telling them how smart of an idea I thought that was. And they kind of laughed and said, well, listen, I'd like to pretend like we were smart. But really, it's just because we had so many guys. And sure enough, they wouldn't have had enough mat space if everybody was going at once. But they just decided, listen, man, here's what we're going to do because we just don't have enough mat space. But I thought it was a great idea because, you know, the injuries that happen, so much of it is like guys not having enough space, guys going with guys they shouldn't be going with, you know, people that they shouldn't be working out with at the time. So I don't know. I mean, as MMA continues to evolve and continues to learn and people are just learning best practices, I mean, it wasn't that many years ago that people thought MMA practice was, hey, let's just go in there and beat the hell out of each other. Right. And you still, of course, have to fight and push each other, but you don't have to, like, you know, full-on spar 5 days a week. So I thought it was cool the way they did that, and I think it's something that other gyms should pay attention to.
And I agree. And it's neat because they almost separated it a little bit. Even when they got within the group, you know, they had a little octagon off the side, another little cage area. And it was they separated. All right, this guy's got to fight. You know, we're going to get him over here, so make sure he gets the work. And then they had two people in another little cage area where, all right, they're going to get to go on here. And where, you know, there were still people drilling everywhere. It was a little overwhelming, you know, because everywhere you looked, there was, like, good stuff happening. It's like, where do I even focus to look at? But, hey, I mean, there's a reason why I think they're so good. And today I think we were lucky enough to get to see a little bit of that.
We did. We got quite a few interviews that we'll be rolling out over the next couple of days and weeks. I guess, you know, some interesting moments that happened. And I think we're just going to have to use it because there's no way to get around it. We were talking to Thiago Alves. He actually took the morning off but came in anyway, which I think just shows how close it is. As we were interviewing him, a fire alarm goes off, which I have to say is the first time that's ever happened to me.
Yeah, right in the middle of things. I mean, full-on lights, the little strobe lights going. You know, we kind of sit there thinking, like, okay, they're just going to hit a switch and it's going to be off, you know. Stand there a few more minutes, you know, awkwardly, like, thank you, Thiago, for waiting here. I'm sure this will go off. And you just kind of, you know, oh, yeah, it's all right. And then more minutes go by. I'm like, are you serious? I think you put out even a little Vine or a video about it so you could check John's Twitter, and I think you can get a feel of it. But for the most part, it's funny because everybody else is still trying to do their workouts, and here we are like, oh, I guess we can't really do anything.
Had to let Thiago Alves go. Fortunately, he was nice enough. You know, we finally were like, hey, listen, this isn't going to go off for a while, is it? He was like, no, probably not. So he left, but he came back, and so we got a nice interview with him. He's obviously headlining against Carlos Condit in May, so you know, a big fight for him coming up, but we were able to speak with him, and that was cool of him. But yeah, the fire alarm going off was kind of interesting. A lot of good interviews that we got. As we said, there was a lot of big-name fighters, a lot of people getting ready for fights, but I think one of the best interviews we got from the day was Dan Lambert.
Oh, boy.
You know, this is one that you're going to have to look out for, because if you wonder where the rivalry comes between American Top Team and the Black Zillions, Dan Lambert breaks it down pretty candidly, pretty easily. And, you know, we talked to a lot of fighters, and most of them at the same point were like, hey, you know, there's a rivalry because we're cross town and we'd like to be better than those next to us. But I respect those guys. I have love for them. Dan Lambert pulls no punches.
That was like almost your Anderson Silva that started coming out there. That's normal. Love you, Anderson. I'm just saying, I know this man's Anderson.
Sure.
That was it coming out.
And Dan Lambert just laid it out, though, man. That was awesome. So I think people are going to enjoy that video. And
boy, he pulls no punches on that. That was amazing.
It really was amazing.
It was the best breakdown, because you've heard it a little bit, and I think we'll probably see more of it in the Tough Show coming up. But boy, he just laid it out, and it was, after that, you was like, how can you not agree?
Right.
You know, like, if I was in his position and felt as strongly as I did, and then to see the things that he did, wow.
And
okay.
What it boils down to, and I'll give you a brief synopsis, but you really need to do yourself a favor. We'll have this video out soon. And you'll need to go check it out when it comes out. But essentially, Dan Lambert is not a fan of Glenn Robinson, the head of the Black Zillions, because, as Dan says, Glenn Robinson used to hang around American Top Team a little bit. His wife used to work out there. And, you know, according from to Dan's point of view, Glenn just decided it would be a cool thing to run an MMA team and basically came in and threw some money around and lured fighters away at the promise of signing bonuses and the promise of money. And that really offended Dan, who said, listen, that's not the way you build an MMA team. The way you build an MMA team is you build it from the ground up. You start from scratch. You identify your talent. He was actually very complimentary of Team Takedown, which, of course, Johnny Hendricks, you know, beat their guy, Robbie Lawler, to get that title. But they were very complimentary of Team Takedown because he said, listen, you know, that's how you build a team. You identify talent. And you develop it from the ground up. And, of course, that's what Team Takedown did. So very interesting to hear. And I think it really – I got excited about the Ultimate Fighter 21 this week. The rivalry kind of isn't as intense maybe as the commercials are trying to sell it. The fighters themselves will tell you, listen, I don't really hate the guy. I got love for him. It's, you know, we're just in the same town and we want to get better. But there's definitely some rivalry between the owners of the teams, and I think that means something. But the other thing about it that everybody talked to us about was how intense these fights were.
Yeah.
The way it worked out, and I thought this was a brilliant, you know, a brilliant play by the UFC to do this, is that not only is it American Top Team versus Black Zillions, but the fights actually take place in those gyms.
In the home gyms,
right,
yeah.
In the home gyms. So
what can you imagine?
It's not just, you know, they found a warehouse space and they built a studio. No, it's in the gym. And they'll tell you, you know, obviously these guys, you know, couldn't tell us results and that sort of thing. And I'll be honest, I don't like knowing the results because then I don't want to watch the show. I like kind of learning on my own. But what everybody did allude to was, like, you are not going to believe the intensity of these of the atmosphere of these fights.
Yeah, that's what it seemed to be, was the atmosphere. It's like you watch other tough episodes and you see the guys from the cast, but from what they said, it was a pretty much who's who of the gyms there around the cage watching these fights. Everybody's pumped up. I'm like, I had goosebumps listening to them talk about it. Yeah. You know, like, I am so excited to watch this season. Let's do it. I'm ready.
The other you know, the other thing about American Top Team that stood out to me, I guess, let's talk about another noticeable absence. Melvin Gillard was supposed to be down here. You know, we didn't arrange that ahead of time. It wasn't that we had any kind of predetermined appointment, but it was one of the guys that we had heard was training at American Top Team. Now, earlier in the week, if you listen to MMA Junkie Radio, you heard Ali Abdelaziz and Ray Sefo basically just kind of go off and say, listen, they haven't been able to get a hold of this guy. They've wanted to do some interviews. They've wanted to do some promos with him, and they can't get a hold of him. And then we come to find out that he hasn't been in the gym in a while. And nobody would talk to him. I mean, American Top Team, these guys, you know, they talk about the family mentality. And they talk about the love that they have for each other. And nobody really wanted to sell him out. You could tell, you know, nobody wanted to say, yeah, the guy's just not being here. But they also didn't want to lie to you. They just kind of look at you and I don't know what to tell you.
I don't know what to tell you. Yeah, who's to say he's not – you know, maybe working out at home, doing something. But you figure if you're this close to a fight, you're going to be with your brothers, you know, in there really swinging. I mean, when you got the access to those fighters, why would you not work with them?
You wonder. He's supposed to fight, you know, if you weren't aware, he was supposed to fight next weekend, World Series of Fighting 20 up in Connecticut. He's fighting Ozzy Dugaloubov, who certainly doesn't have nearly the amount of experience that Melvin Gillard has, but is a very, very tough fighter. And going in ill-prepared, if he is ill-prepared, is a bad sign, man. And gosh, Melvin is just one of the most talented guys in the world. As far as
super
raw,
nice dude,
physical talent. Yeah, and it had his problems over the years, you know, had his issues with substances, had some emotional issues along the way. But is a hard guy to not like, man.
I agree.
He's magnetic, you know, he's got this personality, and of course his fighting style is incredible. So like you said, I mean, maybe he's got a bag hanging up in his garage and he's just working his tail off there, getting ready for his fight. But it's kind of a shame to think that all that talent that we saw on American Top Team and he's not there soaking it in.
One can only wonder.
Yeah.
you hope it's for the right reasons. You hope it's for the right reasons. You know, it's you like to think of the guy at his level. You know, maybe he's figured something out about his body and he realized that he can train a certain way and maybe doesn't have to be in there as much. You know, but. You know, I guess there's one, you know, when you find out how the, I guess, you know, we'll see one night, you know.
We'll
and I hate
out.
To end it. I don't want to send no bad omen because I think Melvin's a wonderful guy. Maybe he'll surprise us. And, you know, if he goes in there and gets a quick finish, maybe he'll start replicating that. Maybe he's got a secret formula that we all don't know about. But you're right. I think the absent was missed. And I know the guys at the gym that we talked to were missing having him there. So.
Well, we've got a lot of interviews that we did put in the bag today, and we'll be rolling those out over the next couple of weeks. But last note on American Top Team, They're aiming to open a new facility in October. They said they've got
a big one.
I think what they said is right now the gym that they're currently in is 17,000 square feet. The new one will be 32,000 square feet on the first floor, and then they're going to have another 9,000 square feet upstairs where it's going to have dorms where they can house like 25 people. And then Dan Lambert was telling me as well they've also purchased like a condominium type area where they can put another 25 people, so they can house up to 50 people. And I asked, you know, what kind of people would you house? And, you know, up and coming prospects that can't afford it, and you know, look like the real deal. People that they identify as like that guy's a talent. He pointed out guys like Mirsad Bektic, who's staying there now. Colby Covington was another guy who said, you know, guys like this where we're like, that's a real deal. We need to give them access to this facility.
Yeah.
He said also, and I thought this was great, you know, fighters that are bringing in training partners for their training camp. I mean, you think about, you fly in somebody. Now, you got to pay their travel. You got to hook them up with some food while they're there. You got to get them transportation, that sort of thing. And then you got to pay for their housing, too.
Yeah.
And this will be a place that you can house people. And I asked Dan, I said, so you'll just charge the fighters like a nominal fee? He said, no. I won't charge them anything. You know, we're not going to charge them anything. You know, we get their normal rate. I think he said their gym rate is just 5%, very, very low.
Yeah, very low.
And I thought that was a really cool thing to say. And it was cool because, you know, I asked him, I guess the secret of fight gyms that maybe people don't know is that fighters do not pay the bills. That it's not the revenue that you make from fighters is not enough to pay your bills. You've got to have the public. You've got to have the normal classes. You know, by the time we were leaving that American Top Team this afternoon, you know, they were herding cats with the jiu-jitsu kids from to 8 years old.
They were youngins.
It was funny. But, you know, that's where your bills are paid, is in the monthly dues of the general public. And so I asked them, you know, how many members would you need to get in this new facility to make it work, you know? And Dan just kind of laughed, and he said, listen, man, I'll never be able to make this work. Financially, I'll never be able to make this work. You know, I'm always going to have to keep working my other job.
I'll never give up that other job.
But it's so awesome. You know, he's basically saying, listen, this will never be profitable. Yeah. I'll always be in the hole. But I just love MMA too much. I love the sport, and I'm going to continue to do this. And I thought that was pretty cool. I mean, you can tell that everybody in American Top Team is doing this because they love it.
Yeah.
And we talked to some of the coaches. You know, they have a huge coaching staff now, and they had some great quotes, I thought, you know, where they said, listen, you know, we've had coaches every now and again get a little bit of ego, get a little bit of whatever, become a bit of a cancer, and we tell them, you got to get out. You know, this is for people who love the sport, and this is for people who are going to sacrifice their life to help other people do well in the sport. I thought it was very cool. I was very honored to spend the day at American Top Team. That's a great gym. And I'm hoping we can make it figure out to where we can come back in October when that new facility is open and maybe give people a tour of what the place looks like. I saw some artist renderings of it, and this place looks awesome. You know, we said right now it's kind of a nondescript building in a complex of offices in warehouse space. This new place, they are building from the ground up. They just laid the foundation this week. They are building this thing from the ground up. It's just, they said, a few blocks away from where they are now. But it is going to be amazing. I mean, this is going to be a mecca of mixed martial arts training. So anxious to see that.
Yeah. I have to give it up. Both gyms, I thought, were amazing. I thought Black Zillions, I liked the setup, how they had that going there. And, ATT, I was blown away because, you're right. You on the outside, it looked nondescript building. I didn't think it was half as big as it was, but it literally opened the door and it was like that scene in Willy Wonka where you open up the little door that they crawl through and all of a sudden it's this giant gym. So, and that's 17,000 square feet. I can only imagine what 32, 35,000, whatever that was.
Incredible.
That's going to be amazing.
So that was our week in Florida, and hopefully that's what we can do each week is just tell you a little bit about what's happening, what's going on. Listen, there's a show coming up this weekend in the USC in Fairfax, Virginia, a big card. Chad Mendes is taking on Ricardo Lamas. You're going to hear everybody breaking it down and giving you their expertise and their advice and your predictions. And, of course, we'll have all that stuff on the site as well. But that's kind of not what I want to do here, man. I just want to let you guys into my life a little bit. And, I'm on the road a lot and have the good fortune of flying around the world to watch fights. And, sometimes we get some cool stories that we don't necessarily have a place to put on the website. So hopefully you guys dig it. You know, I certainly dug sitting outside enjoying this Florida breeze, having a nice cold king of beers here.
I know. We didn't take any time to get any drink breaks. I mean, this was business. This was work, but this was fun.
That's how we do, man. So that's what I hope we can do moving forward. So if you guys dig it, hit me up, you know, at MMA Junkie John on Twitter. Let me know what you like about it, didn't like about it. Let me know what you'd like to see moving forward. You know, we'll get this thing on iTunes eventually. We'll add some graphics. We'll figure it all out, man. But bottom line is, I just love talking about MMA, and I don't get a chance to do enough, and that's what I want to do. So hopefully everybody's cool with that. And, you know, we can take questions. We can do whatever, man. We'll figure all that as we go. But I just want to have a little fun talking MMA. So, listen, I'm going to do this again next week. You will not be there, but I'm gonna use my man Cole Coffee to help me produce this thing for sure. But I will be sending him a file from Krakow, Poland is where I'll be doing that.
Krakow.
I think what I'll be doing is I'm actually staying at an apartment out there with some guys that you may have seen toting the MMA Junkie label lately, Shamat Karsandu, who was at WrestleMania and got some MMA-related coverage from WrestleMania. His cameraman, Abby, as well, will be there. So hopefully I can bring those guys in. And, hey, man, as we travel around, you know, we can bring in some of the other Junkie guys in the mix. So that's going to do it for this week. Hopefully everybody liked it, the MMA Roadshow with John Morgan. That's the new thing I want to do. And hopefully we can get this thing going and have a little fun with it. In the meantime, we'll see you next week. But stay tuned, because at the end of this, we are going to roll in that conversation with Vitor Belfort. Give it a listen. See what you think. Hopefully you dig it. Thanks. It's been a long time since we've got to see you fight. And I know you've been fighting for a long time, but is the excitement starting to set in? How are you feeling right now?
It's just like, sometimes I forget I don't fight for a year, because you're going training with these guys at the gym, and just training for me is, like I said, like I was just talking to you guys about getting paid to fight. It's like I'm getting paid to train. I love training, and I believe that my fighting come from hours of beating the crap out of me, and the sense of being smart. But I believe in sacrifice. I don't believe I retain the glory without paying anything. I believe in the process that God creating a man and said, oh, I'm gonna do everything through blood, you know. So the process of that is like something has to bleed to give life, you know, like that's the only thing I can see to overcome and become anything, you know. My son, he wants to be a ball player. And I said, you gotta pitch that thing. You know, I don't wanna be a pitcher, I wanna be a catcher. I said, it doesn't matter. You have to learn to be a pitcher, to be a good catcher. So it's like the process of training, it's winning. The more you train, the more you learn, the more you see things, the better it is when you arrive in that time, we call it the prime time. It's natural for you. So that's how I see it.
So almost 20 years, you know, in this game. What have you learned? We hear people as they get older, they say, well, I had to change this about training. I had to do this differently. I had to approach it. So what have you learned over 20 years that you're doing differently now?
I'm learning like God gave me 2 years, you know, 2 eyes and 1 mouth. So that's mean zip, listen, and watch. You know, we become what we see and what we hear. You know, we as a human beings, we gotta be careful what type of people are talking to us. You know, who's the people that leading you to a place? Who's your leaders? You know, who are you watching? How you look yourself in the moment and where you wanna be? Like, you know, I have a wonderful wife, and she taught me something very important. You know, she taught me to have goals. Okay. And how you want to see yourself 5 years from now, you know, how you see yourself 10 years from now. And like only 3%, I think it's only 3% of the population of the whole world makes plans, because people just living by, okay, I make $5,000, you know, and in the end of the day, like, oh, how much I have, you know, like people are kind of lost, I think, in the way of investment. And like, what I'm learning in investment is like every day you have a choice, you know, how you invest in your future. Like, it's everything about thought, you know. Like, it's funny, like how you perceive the world. Like, I was talking to myself, we have an inner voice, we talk to ourselves every day, you know, like we're an athlete, I'm an entertainer, so it's hard to know what victory is, you know. I'm a father, I'm a husband, I'm a son, I'm people look up to me. So how I have to devote myself and creating an ethic that can flows in all these channels of life. So my game is like how I see the future. You know, in the past, is I only go there to bring good things. I don't try to be there in the past and crying about it. You know, I should it. No. All that is gone. It's like, okay, what I learned from that thing. So okay, now I bring it to the present. So now the present is the moment that I grinding, process of grinding. But I have to have a vision where I want to be it. And we have this space of time, you know, like I was today, I was talking to my son, you know, and I was reading a devotion for him last night, and we are reading, and he wants to know what's the second day, the third, oh, what is your birthday, Dad? I want to go to your birthday. And I said, no, forget about my birthday. I wanted to focus on now. So I think we have these problems that we always kind of, ah, oh, it's coming. No, you just got to enjoy the process. I think that's life.
You mentioned your birthday, turning 38 years old in the middle of training camp. Does that do anything to your mind? I mean, you starting out as a teenager, do you go, gosh, 38 years old, I'm getting old for this sport, or how do you feel?
I think I'm getting younger, actually. The vision is like, it's a privilege, you know, like the more time I see coming, that's give me more, the more time I see I'm having more time, that's me, I'm having more experience. So when I step into the mat and I see all these young guys, you know, and I say, I'm ahead of them. They don't warm up properly. You know, they think, because when you're a youth, you just think, you don't think. That, like I said, you only 3% prepare themselves for the future. You know, the rest just go with the flow. But when the problem with age was funny, because I heard his story. So this story is it's very, very, very simple. These people, they live in away from the, they never had a contact with humans. These guys, they're Indian, and they used to communicate with the other people. They have to run 40 miles. So these people, they only know that, you know, they run 40 miles. So as they growing up, you know, they when man came and start studying these guys, they see that the older they get, the faster they get. Because the realistic what it was, what shows like, you know, they believe the more they do the way, that way 40 miles, you know, going back. So the more they do, the better they get. So these young guys, 20 years old, the guys when they hit their 40s, went where they are very fast. So these guys was like, man, we should have to study these people. What it was, they come up to what they believe. And what you believe, that's what's gonna ruin your life. That's gonna take you where your beliefs are very important. So I believe that I'm doing the best of my ability for right now, to achieve what is in front of me right now. And I'm not concerned what people said, because what's true for some people, not true for me. Because what it is about belief. And if you believe, you can move mountains. And that's when Jesus said about you can move mountains, that's mean like, no, I'm not gonna get a mountain. Like, I can go through that mountain. I can pass through the mountain, you know? Because moving a mountain, you know, it's almost like a fairy tale. But what it is, like, what about instead of God said, oh, moving a mountain, what that means? My belief that I can go through that mountain, you know, go through that. So, and that's how I see a challenging, that's how I see the next steps of my life, the future, you know. I'm very, very happy where I am, and I'm blessed, man.
You talked about being careful, like what you listen to, and you talked about people, you know, having doubters. Has it been tough for you at all to hear any of the doubt or the criticism? I mean, you've given your whole life to this sport. You've been popular in front of the spotlight for so long. Has it been hard for you at all to hear some of those doubts that are in the background?
No, actually, that's what I said. The more you doubt, the more I prove you wrong. I think what it is, like, I look at the life of Michael Jordan, you know, Ronaldo, the Phenom. You know, I look at these guys and I see that when they doubt these guys is where they grow. So what it is, doubt is like, people, what they doubt is what they fear about their lives. And the reason that I think we live in a world that is people don't have hope anymore is because doubt is much easier, you know, like it's who you listen to, you know. So doesn't mean doesn't work for you, that's gonna be for my life. So what I teach my son right now, me and my wife, is said, never let, I always say, don't let nobody say you can just because they can't. And that's humanity. Humanity, we live in the world system that people, if I cannot make it, I'm gonna make you feel you cannot make it as well. So that's humanity. So we have this disease, and I'm getting master on ripping. Like I always said, I look like my life is like a garden. I don't let no one dump trash in my garden. You know, I make sure it's all well protected. The walls are big. So when they trying to dump trash in my garden, you know, I just said, no, not here. We have organic thinking, brilliant thinking. We know where we want to be. We have ethic. We are very no GMO. You know, we are very, very focused in what we feed our mind. So that's how I work.
It seems you spend so much time, you know, taking care of yourself, taking care of your family, being the best Vitor Belfort you can be. How much time do you spend thinking about Chris Weidman?
Actually, almost 0%. Because what it is about preparation of our Vitor Belfort, you know. The best Vitor got to be there, you know. We study him. We it's very important to know what your opponent brings and what's his style, you know, what he likes to do, what he's always with bread and butter, you know. He always, you know, as the fight goes on, when the fighters start getting tired or frustrated, he always go back for what he knows, you know, his core values, you know. I just like, my focus is like preparing Vitor, kicking, punching, knee, because before everybody's like, Vitor come with his hands, and then Vitor coming with the ground, and now I'm reinventing myself every day. So I think what it is, like, I'm trying to create an animal, like feet of gazelle, you know, roar like a lion, and have fast as I can be, so I can be in one place doing many things, and I trying to be creative, an artist. That's what it is, you know.
The Phenom. Do you still relate to that name, or do you feel like it's time for a change? Can you still be a Phenom 20 years later?
Yes, the Phenom is always a Phenom. You know, I think he's, and you gotta, and that's what the thing is, like, you have to be, you gotta live up to what it is, you know, if you want to be somebody, if you want to keep doing something, you gotta be keeping doing your best. You cannot stay on the game if you don't improve. I think you cannot last. And you gotta know that everything has time, you know, time to cry, time to reap, time to laugh, it's time to win. And I think this is a good time, you know. We're going in the process of harvest now. Be having fun in every season.
You know what it's like to be a champion, so it's not like you're trying to accomplish something you've never accomplished before. So with that in mind, what does this mean to you? Is it something special? Does it mean something unique, something new? What does this accomplishment mean to you?
It is a journey. I think it is, the journey is what really matters for me, the process, you know. You know, we have a saying in my house. We have if you guys are gonna film here at the gym, you're gonna see a lot of, we work a lot of what we believe, the core values or our beliefs. And one of the things is the process and outcome, you know. Process is something that I have control. You know, I have control of the process. And I believe that the journey of a real champion is not about one event. It's because, like my wife's telling me all the time, the most important fight, the most important achievement is what's next. Because when you achieve that thing, it became history. And people talk about it, people criticize you about it, but it became history. So you gotta be focused on in the process. And you gotta understand that the process is living day by day, time by time, you know, going through the process. Don't try to escape. It's gonna get pain, you're gonna bleed, you're gonna get, you know, people gonna try to discourage you, but you focus on the process. You bring your values, you bring your people, you know. It's like we have a mission. So when you achieve the glory, it's almost like it's something that's not new, but something that we share. And I know who gave me the glory. I know it's God's glory. I know that belongs to Him. So I have to make sure I stand on my ground and I share that. Because actually, we have a lot of people that work in, you know, my house. I have my wife, my kids, my trainers, my friends, you know, sponsors, you know, fans, you know, all over the world. So people, the key is to share your glory and understand that that glory belongs to God, and you just continue to live your life, and hopefully that I can, you know, contagion people to don't give up, to live their dreams.
You've always been very like thankful for Henry Hooft. You've praised him a lot and the Black Zillions team. What is it about Henry? What is it about the Black Zillions that you love so much and that's helping you right now?
Because Henry is a type of unique person. We call him black and white. You know, my wife and I, we're talking about, you need people like that, you know, when you're doing a job like I do. You need people to tell you the truth and not trying to massage you and anything, you know. Sometimes he's too white and he's too black, but he's good. We always know what it is. So I need people like him in my life, and I'm glad to have people like him in my life, and great friends, great partners, because you gotta understand that you cannot be a group, you gotta be a team. You know, I wanna be there helping improving everyone. You know, when I look into Rashad and I talk to him today in the gym and I say, Rashad, it's important, you know, I need you around. You know, I know you're coming from an injury, but no, I'm coming. You know, it's like you need to understand that people matters for you. And doesn't matter positions, ranks, and all that. I treat everybody presidential. And I think that's how you should treat people, and people should treat you the same way. You know, we equal, we have different, you know, different goals, different moments, but everybody the same. You know, when you step into the gym, when you go to train, I want to relate it to people. I want to be passionate about it, to contagion people and to get people to contagion me. I think that's what makes champions and a team a real team. So I love it. I love what I do. I love my team. I love my friends, my family, and I love what I do. And they help me to achieve my dreams. They're part of it. Big part.
I'm curious, do you sit back at all and do you ever close your eyes at night or during the day? Would you envision the fight at all? Do you think about how it's going to go? And if so, you know, when it plays through your mind, how do you see this fight playing out?
I see the fights playing out, you know, the strategy-wise. You know, I see me, you know, getting my game on, you know, and kind of be ready to apply, you know. They say, well, you have plan A, plan B. I have one plan, and my plan is win. You know, it's like, almost like two, I get, if you start getting too much like, oh, I have plan A, plan B, it's not like I'm a magician. I'm a fighter. I go there to win, you know. So we have head kicks, you know, front kicks, right arm set, you know, hooks, combination, 3 combos, 4 combos, 6 combos, you know, ground game. We got everything, and just to go, when I play out it, and I always in the win position, you know. My wife, you know, they put some art in my house, you know, every time I go, I have my spinning, they create like some character, like, you know, on the head, on the body of I think is a, you know, Luke Rockhold, we have the head of Chris Weidman, you know, on the body of all that, we have the head of Chris Weidman. It's always the next, you know, and it becomes him, but for me it's almost like it's winning. It's like my arm raise, you know. I'm winning every round and every second of the fight. Enjoy, you know, enjoy the pain. If you don't like pain, you're in the wrong sport. That's what I mean. Like sometimes I ask myself, I'm an entertainer or I'm a fighter, or I'm an athlete. So it's 3 different things. You gotta understand. You have to be an entertainer, you gotta be an athlete, and you have to be a fighter. But the most important of these 3 things is which one?
I'd say fighter.
Yeah, the fighter. So, but, and then I go back to life. You know, I'm talking right now, and we have people and lawyers on watching me. You know, doctors or some kid, and he say, I don't know, but everyone is a fighter. You have to fight for your family. You have to fight to live your dreams. You gotta fight to live your morals and your principles in the midst of this grace world. You know, like sometimes the righteousness. Oh, I'm looking for my righteousness. I think I deserve this. You know, racist. No, you know, because I'm black. I'm white. I don't have colors. You know, sometimes you gotta just understand. You know, we don't have colors. We are all the same. But people are fighting for their rights. But in the end of the day, we are fighters. But on that cage that you see on the back right now, you gotta be a fighter before the athlete and before the entertainer. So that's how I gotta remind myself, I'm a fighter who end up entertaining people, who end up motivating people, who end up, you know, being an athlete because I have to be an athlete. But the most important thing I cannot forget, I'm a fighter, fighting to win.
So well said. You talked about having the 5-year plan, the 10-year plan. I'm sure that involves family and personal life and all those things, but I'll just ask you, fighting. How long does fighting fit in? Is it in that 5-year plan? Is it in that 10-year plan? How long can you keep being a fighter?
I had a talk with my wife and I kind of make a plan in my mind. You gotta have a plan. If you don't have a plan in life, you gonna fail. You know, I said, when I hit my 40, you know, when I hit my 40, you know, I sit down, we pray, but I'm looking like I'm so good. I feel like in my prime, you know, like who knows, I make my goal, you know, I have to make goals. And every 10 years in life, they say the world change, you know, climate change, the economy change, every 10 years period, big crash comes or something comes in the economy. So when I hit 40, I sit down. And then maybe I would say, okay, now we go to 50, you know, who knows, I'm going to be able to stretch to 60, you know, who knows, the UFC is going to start making UFC masters, you know, these guys come from, who knows, you know, like, you never know, I'm ready, I'm in my prime, you know, I pray God, I say, God, give me the strength until I have the will to train and be prepared, being a fighter. If I have that flame, becoming a fighter, because I don't want to be entertained. If I need to be entertainer, I go do all the things, you know, movies, actors, or whatever, WWE. The number one priority in this sport, MMA, you got to be a fighter first. If you feel like you cannot achieve that thing is not in your heart, it's just like you want to go there to perform, and that's the wrong sport to be around, you know. My wife would tell me, Sherry, it's time for you just to hang your gloves, you know. So I have the right person to tell me the truth when I need to hear, so she'll be the first for sure.
Last question I have for you. What's one thing that you wish people knew about you? One thing that you think people misunderstand about you, don't know about you, have the wrong idea about you. If there's one thing that you want every MMA fan to know about Vitor Belfort, what would it be?
I think I have a couple, not just one. I think first I'm a human, you know, we all the same. I think we all make mistakes. We all end up, you know, in a point of a life, let's say, oh, what's going on, you know? And what I realize is like, everything starts on you, you know? For me to love you, I gotta love me first. For me to forgive you, I gotta be to forgive me first. I believe we're going to a season of life. There are people trying to be God, you know, and judge people, you know, and kind of discriminate people. What I like to know about me is just like, I'm a human, you know, I have mistakes. Even though I'm a Christian, I make mistakes, you know. I'm not perfect, I'm not God. I'm searching and working hard to have a better life, it's a hard thing to forgive, and I had, if I can share one thing with you guys, is like when I end up one time, you know, just challenging my faith, say what I believe. I'm a Christian, okay. I've been living as a Christian, and I start making some things in my life, some change, and look to my wife, and I did a hard question to my wife one time. I say, what I think I should change in my life. You know, what do you think I should change? Because when you ask that question, in a private to someone that can kind of challenge you and tell you the truth. So I start making these questions, and one time I got challenged to forgive. I didn't know what forgiveness is. I didn't know what it really was. And I had a missing sister, and all the case was my sister was like she was murdered in after a sequence of a kidnapping. And in my mind, I have this gang that they used to do kidnapping in Brazil. And I remember my spiritual father came to me and said, "Victor, you know, I see in you something that you've been holding on to. You have to release that to start being a fighter. If you want to be that fighter, and my wife and him was talking to me. I cannot function becoming. I was just my first baby was there. You know, I was just married. My sister got kidnapped 2 months later. What was kind of the situation? Everything was a tragedy. So I was just in that small. I was." They put me on that place and say, okay, they challenge me. They say, you're going to have to make a decision how you want to carry your life. Because you ever thought about you can live your whole life and you guys would never had a clue where your sister is, how she is? And you ever asked that question to me? And I was kind of shocked and I say, no. And say, you better ask your question because that question is going to dictate your future. You have a young son. Your wife, you have a wonderful wife, you want to have a healthy marriage, you want to have a healthy life, and you want to live by your faith. So he challenged me and said, you're going to learn to leave that behind, and you got to resolve that problem. And I remember I made a contract with God, I signed in my Bible, that from that day on, I would live a life with hope, with knowing that my problem was solved, even though in the natural it wasn't solved. So what it was, one day I got challenged and I went to my room. And then I went to this room and God challenged me with forgiveness. And he started saying, you want me to forgive you, but for me to forgive you, you gotta forgive people that hurt you. And I started going back to, you know, it was kind of a very crazy moment. So that's what I want to share. So on that moment on, I was forgiving everyone that hurt me, friends, little things, and I was going to the big things and end up say, okay, it's done. And he said, no, it's not done. It was an inner voice, so it's not done. You gotta forgive the ones they did something to you. They took your sister. They were evil to you. And it was a hard process for me to forgive these people. But in my mind, I play out it and I did. And when I did, it was kind of almost like I was free. I believe me, I almost thought I could fly. I became a new person and I experienced that forgiving is something that if you work hard, just like a weight, you only get muscles if you go to the gym. You only achieve forgiveness if you work through forgiveness. And you gotta forgive yourself, and that's hard. That's why I think we're living in a very unfunctional world because people are doing a lot of drinking, a lot of drugs because they cannot forgive what they do wrong and they end up finding that excuse to keep doing wrong. So what I discovered that everything that I want to happen to me, to people to give me, I gotta give to myself first. So. You gotta love you, you gotta forgive you gotta have mercy on you so that way you can give that. And that's what Jesus said, you know. Love yourself like you love, you know. First love yourself and then you can be able to love others like you love yourself. So, and put God first. And doesn't matter if you're right or wrong, just surrender yourself and say, God, here I am, willing to change. Be ready to change. That's it.